9 in Ogden, Illinois. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Learn about Krannert Center's 2006-2007 performance season with Tiempo Libre, Nadja Salerno Sonnenberg, and the Mark Morris Dance Group by visiting KrannertCenter.com or stopping by to pick up a season brochure.
This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal and Henry Frain, is at the controls. This is your opportunity here this morning to talk about, ask questions about birds and bird watching. And our guest is Larry Keller from Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign, a place where they sell feeders and birdhouses and birding supplies and bird seed and all manner of stuff associated with birds and wild birds. He's been here before on the program to talk about that subject, and we're pleased he could be here again. We're now in spring migration, so that means there are a lot of interesting birds passing through the area that just do pass through, and we can talk about that. Or any other kind of questions that you might have related to birds, I know he will do his best to give you an answer, and particularly if what you're thinking about is things that you might do to attract more birds to your yard. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Again. What kind of things, now we talk about here, that will be either passing through now or perhaps within the next few weeks might be passing through, and people might have the chance to see, provided they're looking and paying attention, that they might have the chance to see?
Right now is the height of migration for our spring migration. So the birds that are coming out of Central South America, even southern United States, are starting to come up through this area. We're kind of a stopover spot for most of these type of species of birds that are coming through. Warblers coming through. You've got your grosbeaks are coming through now, hummingbirds and orioles. So those are some of the real common ones that people are going to see in their yards. And, of course, there's a lot of different types of feeders and presentations you can do to get them in the yard and keep them here during that passing period, and so you get to enjoy them for a few weeks.
Yeah, I know a neighbor of mine, someone who lives not very far away, said that they had seen a lot of grosbeaks. I know at least one time recently I've seen some kind of warbler. The problem was the warblers, they're small, and they don't sit still.
Right.
Hard to get a good look at. They won't sit there for you so you can get a good look at them. They're really kind of flitty.
Yes, exactly. And they're not something that's going to be attracted to the feeders. You might see them in the backyard in the trees. Usually at the top of the trees is the most common place in chasing insects and feeding that way. If you have a bird bath or some sort of a dripper system, you'll see them down closer to the ground, hopefully closer to your window so you can get a better look at them. But the warblers are tough. There's a lot of different ones. You've got the males. Females are completely different colors. You've got first-year colorations that are different on the males on some of the species. A good pair of binoculars and a good field guide is what's needed, and a quick eye, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. The quick eye, that's the most important thing. We have some folks here with calls. Let's start in on line one. Someone listening in Champaign.
Hello. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning.
We have a pair of wood thrushes in our backyard, so we're very pleased to have those. We've never had them before. However, my question has to do with what some people think is a less desirable bird, the goose.
Okay.
We have had on our pond four sitting geese. Three of them hatched their eggs and took them elsewhere. The one who is left has been sitting there for going on 6 weeks. There's something wrong there.
Right. The eggs are probably not fertile in that situation.
Well, the father keeps chasing her off the nest. It's like he knows something that she doesn't.
Yeah, that's really hard to say. They're very territorial birds, and it might be a situation where that is not a bonded pair, and her mate, whichever male that would have been, was either killed or left the area, and that's not necessarily her mate. That could be a possibility. There's a lot of different possibilities involved.
Whoever
with
this
like that
is very faithful.
Yeah, yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. But the territorialism, they're very, very territorial during the springtime, during the mating season. And then once the eggs hatch and they have young ones, geese tend not to be as territorial. They don't like to be mixing the families too much. They get a little angry with each other. But, yeah, that type of behavior, it does occur.
Uh-huh. So we would not be doing her any favors by taking that egg out of her nest.
No, and technically you're not allowed to either.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes.
That's good to know.
Yeah, there are state and federal laws that Do not allow you to harass or mess with either nesting or the adults.
Okay, well, so, I sure wouldn't harass this pair.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Well, that's probably an important point to make, that all bird species, I think except three,
right,
are protected by law.
Right.
And the ones that are not protected are
the
sparrows,
English house sparrow, the European starling,
starlings, and
the common pigeon or the
rock pigeons.
Dove.
Okay, right. Those three, but everything else is protected. So to bother them in any way, to do anything to them is not only is it just wrong, but
illegal.
It's against the law.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. To Indiana next, line four. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I've had a grosbeak stayed around for 3 days. Well, I'm sorry to say, it's that anyway. It looked like the same one. And before it took off, had a cowbird, too. It was something I don't see too often.
Mm-hmm.
Due to an intelligent chipmunk, I've changed my situation on my two bird feeders. He used to climb up. He climbed up one, figured out how to get on it, and it was one of those, like a house type thing. And he jumped over to a taller one, which has three tiers in it. You know, you can mix the seeds one way or the other. So I put another one up, another three-tuber, and I put all of wild bird seed in one and all of good old oily sunflower seed in the other. And, you know, just all hell broke loose, basically. And doesn't seem to be any favoritism so far. It's only been going on for about 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
But something I started thinking about is the age of seeds. When you go into one of the big stores, you know, I don't know how fast they go through those things or not. And I just wondered, is that a terrible importance for sunflower seeds and the usually package you get for the wild bird seeds? I know finches won't mess with dry thistle. I've
right.
learned that the hard way for sure.
Right.
I've got, you know, I don't know what to do with it. I just throw it out every once in a while, hope something will eat it. And I'll ring off. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for the question. It's a good question. We get that all the time about the seed quality and the freshness of the seed. Most of your seed, of course, is harvested during the fall, and that's true with bird seed. So it depends on the storage of where you're getting it from. That's what it basically comes down to. So, for example, this time of year when you're buying sunflower seed, if you're buying it from a store that has had reserves of sunflower sitting in their warehouse since November and it's in the retail warehouse, they're probably not controlling the insect problem and concerned about the freshness and the moisture quality of the particular seed. If you're buying it from a specialty store that's buying it from a quality distributor who's mixing the seed and storing it themselves and taking care of that quality because it's in their best interest, of course, to sell very high quality stuff, you're probably going to get a better quality seed. Typically what we tell people is on regular bird seed, and that includes the sunflower seeds, you don't want to store stuff at home for more than 6 months at a time. And that also includes for the retailer. They shouldn't have that stuff in the store for more than 6 months at a time. It's going to dry out as one problem you'll see. Also see a very large bug problem inside the seed. It doesn't harm the birds, but your quality of the seed is going to be a little bit different, and you're going to have probably less bird activity, and you're probably going to have a mess with the insects at your house if you buy that stuff. Thistle seed is a whole other type of area to cover. You usually don't want to store thistle for more than 3 months at home. That stuff, especially over wintertime, will dry out, so you do not want to keep that and make sure you buy it in small quantities from someplace that's going to have it fresh, that's for sure.
So the deal here is not so much that the old seed is going to be bad, it's just that the birds won't eat it, won't as readily.
Right. The nutritional value it can be depleted is what it comes down to.
Oh, okay.
For example, a sunflower seed, if it's been devastated by insects in a particular bag, the meat in the sunflower is not there. It's shriveled up or it's completely gone. So the birds are not getting the nutritional fulfillment off the bird feeder. So you're going to see less birds at the feeder.
So they're going to come up there, they're going to eat it, and they're going to say, this is no good, and they're going to go someplace else.
Right. Naturally, they're not going to expel any energy to get a zero energy return.
All right. Well, let's continue here. Belgium is the next caller, line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
In one of your appearances on Mr. Inge's show in the past, you and I discussed some birding areas, and we discussed an area north of Danville that is a nice little wetlands. And at the time, I told you that it was a very nice area, and it was not possible to get to it.
Correct.
Because they were redoing the road. Well, they have finished the road,
right.
And they have refinished doing the wetland area, too. So now it is wheelchair accessible.
Mm-hmm.
It has a two-story overlook that is a real nice little tower. It has a a trail that goes out into the water, into the wetlands area that's very nice, all wheelchair accessible. Unfortunately, the area over to where the heron nesting area is really not wheelchair accessible. It's more of a trail. Not difficult trail in any way, but it's definitely not wheelchair accessible. I remember we had spoke about it, and I said you just couldn't get to it because of the road construction. Well, finally they got done with that here.
Yeah, and for this time of year, that's one of the best places around here.
It's
in East Central Illinois. Yeah, it is. Besides, you've got your migrating warblers. You'll see a lot of through there water birds, including waterfowl, shore birds. You've got the rookery, like you mentioned, of the great blue herons. Also, there is a nesting pair of bald eagles in that area, so it's not uncommon to see them flying around over there. So it's one of the best locations with that boardwalk going out into the water like that. It's really a neat place.
So where is this we're talking about?
It's Lake Vermilion, and it's the boardwalk area on Lake Vermilion.
If you take probably the best way to get there would be to get off of Interstate 74 on Gilbert Street, which is Route 1. Take Route 1 north, all the way north of the Walmart, which is north of Danville, at the very north end of Danville. You'll come to the first stoplight north of Walmart. It's called Newell Road. You'll want to turn left or west.
Exactly.
Follow that, and you cannot miss it.
Yeah, it takes
right
you
on the road.
Yep, takes you right down to it, basically.
Yeah. A second question, if I can.
Okay, sure.
About 3 weeks ago, I was awoken in the middle of the night by what sounded like a group of monkeys playing and carrying on outside my window.
Mm-hmm.
I do live in a wooded area.
Okay.
And I looked around, and there was some hooting, but then there was also a very loud crawl and cry and stuff.
Right, right.
That is a barred owl, isn't it?
Correct.
That's what I thought. That is the most amazing sounds and carrying on. Are they mating, or are they just having fun, or what?
You're probably hearing mating. They do that quite often throughout the year. We call it the monkey call of the barred owl, and it's what it sounds like. It sounds like a couple of monkeys. It'll make their hair on your back of your neck stand up if you're in the woods not expecting it. So
if you're asleep and it's outside your window at 3 o'clock in the morning,
exactly.
It's the same thing.
I'll bet.
Yeah. It's a very common call by that particular owl species. Wooded areas, especially if you live near water, like some of the river systems and stuff.
Yes.
Plenty of barred owls, one of the more common owls around, and everybody notices them, not by sight, but by sound, like you're saying.
Yeah, you can't see them. You'll hear them fluttering and carrying on, but
exactly.
You can't see them.
Yep, exactly.
Thank you very much.
Right, thanks
thank
for calling.
You. Our guest in this part of Focus 580, Larry Keller from Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign, a place where they sell feeders and bird houses and bird seed and other things related to birding. Questions about birds are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Champaign, I believe in line three.
Three?
Hello. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I'm wondering if you know about the hearing of robins. Do they actually hear worms in the ground?
There's a lot of research that has went into that.
Okay.
And when you see a robin out there and he's hopping across the yard, all of a sudden he stops and he tilts his head.
Mm-hmm.
And then he lunges forward a few inches and grabs a nice big earthworm off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Is it vibration in his feet? Is it sight? Is it sound? Most of it, from what I have understood and from the research that I've gathered, it's mostly sight is what they're seeing.
Oh, what do they see?
Well, they see the ground moving. The little blade of grass is moving. And you have to remember that those worms, they're not deep at all, and most of them are on the surface, especially after it rains or when you're out watering the yard. That will bring those worms to the surface.
Okay.
And so most of that is sight,
so
is how it's done.
The head is in order to be able to
get a little bit of visual, exactly.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's go
Bye.
To line one. This is Urbana. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm calling from Urbana. I live sort of between the Lincoln Square Mall and the university, and I had an owl question.
Okay.
We have about 5 owls that live in the trees right outside our house.
Okay.
They're small little things with white faces.
Okay.
And they sort of around dusk seem to play with each other, running around through about 5 trees out front. And I just wondered if you had any idea what kind of owls they would be and if they'll stick around all summer.
Sounds like you've got a family of screech owls. Yes. The young ones will hang around with the parents quite a bit. They're very active once they've come out of the nest. And they are a cavity nester, so they nest inside of a hollow tree. Mm-hmm. You can see them inside of a hole in the side of a building. Or you can also put up an owl box for them. And they were very, very active on using owl boxes.
Okay.
What you're seeing is parents with the young, and they'll disperse, but you'll definitely keep a pair in that area. It sounds like the territory is good for them. Mm-hmm. They're finding plenty of food. That's why they nested in that area. So they're a year-round resident. They don't leave. They do move around a little bit, so you might have them at one point in time of the year, then they might lose them for a while. But if you do put an owl box up, what's neat about the owl box is it's one of the few cavity nesters that will actually use the box year-round.
Okay.
They use it for nesting during the spring, summertime, and then in the fall and wintertime, they actually use it for roosting purposes.
So where would you put an owl box up?
I've seen them work as low as 8 feet before, even 6 feet, on the side of a tree, overlooking an open area is the best. And you can go up to 12 feet with them.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
I know that I have heard, I'm pretty sure I have heard screech owls around where we live. Mm-hmm. I've never seen one, but I have heard them. And once you recognize what the call is, but the thing is that it doesn't sound particularly owlish.
Right. Exactly.
It's not like that.
Right,
at all.
Exactly.
To me, it sounds a little bit more like whippoorwillish.
Yeah, it's a whinnying sound,
yes,
almost.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's a twirling type whinnying sound, and it's very different, there's no question. But once you've heard it one time, you've ID'd it, you'll never mistake it. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, let's go to line number 4. This is someone on a cell phone in Champaign, I think. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Just had a quick question. Was out the other day. I live in a small town in East Central Illinois, and was outside playing baseball with the kids. And there was a group of, four or five birds. And they were kind of just meandering back and forth in the sky. But these things, they look like aircraft carriers. I mean, they were absolutely the biggest bird I've ever seen flying around. And somebody said, "Well, those are turkey vultures."
Right.
And I don't know. You know, I've never heard that before. And I was just wondering if, in fact, that's what they are. And do they are they going after live game, or are they scavengers? But from the sky, they absolutely look huge.
Right, yeah. The biggest bird, one of the biggest birds, I should say, that you'll see this time of year and the way you're describing and how they're flying, those were turkey vultures. We'll see them here starting in spring, all through the summer, and then into the fall before they migrate out of here. And they do nest here locally in East Central Illinois. It is not uncommon to see nests of them. They are scavengers, though. They will not catch live prey. They're the ones eating dead animals off the side of the roads or dead cattle out in a pasture or something along that line.
You said they migrate. Where do they go in the winter?
They head down, if I remember correctly, they are going down through the southeastern part of the United States is where they're heading. Yes.
All right. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks for the call.
And this is something that I guess there are some places in urban areas where, particularly I guess in the South, where they're common. Where you see them.
Exactly.
All the time. Around here, you might be surprised to see, particularly because they're so big.
Yeah, they're so large. Mahomet has a really large population over there in the last 5-6 years. We've been seeing a ton of them over in that area. So it's not too uncommon to see.
Yeah. And they do look like this strange combination of a turkey and a vulture.
Yeah, they're large, exactly. They have the bald head is where they're getting the word from. But definitely a scavenger. They're considered a bird of prey, but they are a scavenger.
All right. Let's go next to line number 2. This is someone in Mattoon. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a couple of questions, if you don't mind. One, I generally use a commercial hummingbird food for my hummingbird feeders.
Okay.
I thought about, after listening to you last spring, about going, and I did towards the end of the season, with fixing my own.
Okay.
But I was kind of concerned about just having the boiled sugar water getting rancid quicker than a commercial feed, although I do try to change the feed out at least once a week.
Okay.
Am I silly in that concern?
No, the spoilage of the nectar is about the same, whether you're making yourself or using the commercial stuff.
Okay.
As a general rule, we tell people every 3 to 4 days, change the nectar, clean the feeder. If you have extra nectar, you can store it in the refrigerator for about 7 to 10 days. If it starts turning cloudy in the refrigerator, then you need to throw that out also.
Okay.
But if it's warmer, we start getting into the 90-degree temperatures, you might need to change that nectar every other day.
Okay.
So definitely keep the feeders in the shade and keep it as cool as possible.
I do that as much as possible.
Okay.
And the other thing, because of where we live, and we live in a rural area where there's nothing but a farm field behind us, We've had our satellite dish moved, and so I'm left with like a 3.5-foot mast in my backyard. It's about 30 feet away from my feeders. In the backyard, I've got one hummingbird feeder and a safflower seed feeder and some finch feeders with thistle seed. And I asked the guy, well, what am I supposed to do with this? And he said, well, a lot of people put birdhouses on them or bird feeders.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if there's anything that you would suggest in the way of a birdhouse, given its proximity and how low it is to the ground. Is there any sense in putting a birdhouse on it? And if so, what would you recommend?
If you're in a rural area, you could do a bluebird house. However, the proximity to your house and human dwellings, you're going to encourage a massive house sparrow problem at the bluebird house.
Okay.
So it's almost a losing battle. Now, it's something you can attempt to do. Usually, bluebird houses mounted 4.5 or 4 feet high tend to have less house sparrow problems, and simply because the house sparrows don't like nesting that low to the ground. However, the bluebirds don't mind. But then you get into other predation problems such as raccoons and possums, so you have to get a particular house that's going to help against that or baffle the pole itself so nothing can get in there.
Okay.
So where you're describing you live at, bluebirds is a possibility. If you're not going to want to do that, I would definitely just do another feeder. I wouldn't worry about another house.
All righty.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
All right. Very good. And let's see. We'll go next. Line number 3, and this would be someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi,
good
I was
morning.
Listening and heard your discussion about the eggs, the goose eggs.
Mm-hmm.
We have found a goose egg, and there's no nest built around it. In fact, it was put into one of our patio pots, and last weekend when we were trying to transfer out the old dirt and put in some new dirt, that's when my husband found it.
Okay.
Now, is that considered a nest? Do we have? We didn't. We actually left it there and put the daisies on top of it. But we weren't sure what to do because this actually happened to us 2 years ago. And we left the egg there thinking somebody or something's going to get it, come back and get it. And it eventually did disappear. It never hatched, and we never saw it broken and left, you know, the shells left or anything like that. So we don't know where it went. So what's your advice?
Well, the egg is no good. There's no question about that. The nest, if it's an active nest that's going to be successful, there's no mistaking it. She builds a nest. She pulls down, lines it. She protects it. The gander will also protect the nesting site. What you're seeing is probably an infertile egg being laid by a female. And
okay.
She's just laying them in a random location, has no intention of ever nesting and raising a brood.
Okay.
So that sort of stuff happens quite often with waterfowl.
Okay, so we shouldn't worry about it we can throw it away or
something? Yep, I just dispose of it. If you leave it there, predation, particularly raccoons or possums,
we'll
grab it and eat it, yes.
Okay, so that's the best thing to do. Now, as far as seeds concerned,
mm-hmm.
We tried a bird feeder in the back, and we just bought it, you know, at one of the gardening stores, and they had them, and we set it up. And what we found was that the seed that came with it, they couldn't get to it. The birds couldn't get to it. And so we thought, okay, let's not do that. Let's think more strategically next time. So we want to get a bird feeder. Want to get a bird feeder that we've seen cardinals in the back, of course, the usual sparrows and the variety that's around here. So we want to get a feeder that is good for them, especially the cardinals, because we want to get them to come back in.
Okay.
And they do actually stay around very often, and they come back every day. And so we want that, and then we want to, encourage other, you know, songbirds. And so we want a feeder that can actually have the seed that encourages that.
Okay. With cardinals, the one thing that you have to keep in mind is they classify as a platform or a ground feeding type bird. So the larger the landing area for them to fit up on, the more comfortable they are feeding there. So if you go with a hopper type feeder, say it's a box type feeder where the lid lifts and you can store some seed in there, you want to make sure that the perching area is wide enough for the body of the cardinal to fit up on. If you're using a basic tube feeder that holds sunflower seed, they're not going to fit on those perches very comfortably, and so therefore you're not going to see the cardinals up there as often. Unless you take a tube feeder with a tray on the bottom, and then you're adding in extra perching area and allowing that cardinal to fit up there very comfortably. So there's hundreds and hundreds of different types of feeders that you can go with. But just keep in mind, you want something that the cardinal can fit up there comfortably and something that can disperse either sunflower or safflower seed.
All right. And the kind of seed that you put on there is going to be make a difference too.
Exactly. Yeah. What it all comes down to is you pick a quality feeder, and then you can dictate what type of birds you're going to see at that feeder with the type of seed that you're using.
Okay. We are a little bit past the midpoint here of our second hour Focus 580. Larry Keller is our guest from Wild Birds Incorporated of Champaign. And if you have questions about birds and bird watching and bird feeding, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I didn't catch the very beginning of the show. Have you talked about turkey nests? What are turkeys? Where do turkeys nest? We have the famous Urbana turkeys.
Correct.
Just wondering, one of them must be laying eggs, I would think. That it seems like there are a couple of females in the group.
The last that I heard, there's two left, and they're both toms. So we're not going to have to worry about nesting on this go-around.
Oh, okay.
However, turkeys do nest on the ground. They build a very tight nest. They're kind of like any other fowl, like a pheasant or a chicken. They'll nest on the ground. And the hen is the one that does the incubating. What's kind of unique about turkeys, though, is they like to roost in trees. And even the pullets, the small turkeys, once they're out running around, they will get up into the tree underneath the mother, and she'll cover them with her wing at night to protect them. But they do nest on the ground.
Alrighty.
Okay.
All right. You know, what's never been clear to me in all this discussion of the famous wild turkeys or turkeys of Urbana is whether, in fact, these were wild turkeys or whether these were turkeys that had been kept by somebody.
Right.
And then they either escaped or they were sent on their way. I mean, are these wild turkeys?
The best that I know of and from what I have heard and seen, yes, they are.
They actually are wild
but
turkeys.
But this, and I think this is kind of a prelude of what's going to happen in the future. The turkey mm-hmm. population in the state of Illinois has exploded over the last decade. And, you know, it's not uncommon to be in town and you're going to see white-tailed deer walking down the street or grazing in somebody's front yard. It does happen from time to time. And I think we're going to eventually get to a level where turkeys are going to do the same thing also. They establish populations just about anywhere and everywhere where you've got timber, and that includes river basins. So even long stretches of timber along rivers, turkeys have flourished around those. And so as we have more and more sprawl out into the more wild areas, people are seeing them more and more. It's not uncommon for us to have 4, 5, 6 people come into the store location, let us know that turkey was in the backyard feeding underneath the bird feeder.
Yeah.
And so it's very, very common nowadays. And I think you're going to start seeing that more and more in the urban areas.
Well, that's really interesting. And it's an interesting result of, you know, our expansion into rural areas mm-hmm. and eating up natural habitat. If we disturb the habitat and we take it away from the animals, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to come,
right.
And they're going to make – those that can are going to make the transition. And, in fact, I live in Urbana, not very far from Urbana High School. And just recently, one day, one of my neighbors said at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, she had 2 deer
right.
in her backyard. Then a couple of days later, another neighbor said, by the way, I just saw a coyote run through your yard.
Exactly.
And we were all sort of amazed, but probably we shouldn't be surprised. And
no.
We're going to start to see more and more stuff like that, things that we think of as wild animals that we are not used to seeing in urban environments. We're going to see more and more of them.
Yeah, it's just a simple – the animals are going to adapt.
Yeah.
And as you see people's yards – people are planting more bushes, shrubs, trees, trying to make it more natural. And that just aids into that aspect of the animal coming in feeling very comfortable. And then again, you know, there's a lot less predation also for that particular species, a lot of particular species. So they're very comfortable in those areas. They're very safe. There's plenty of food. There's plenty of water and plenty of shelter.
Yeah. You think we might see pheasant?
We do from time to time. If you live on the outskirts of towns, you will definitely see you will see that the pheasants will show up from time to time.
All right. Well, let's keep on going here. We'll talk next with someone who is listening in Vermilion County. This is line 4. Hello.
Hi. I have some questions about barn swallows.
Okay.
We live in the country, and I assume they are barn swallows, but they build sort of like a half nest on a vertical board, actually in our carport above our cars.
Right.
And it was my observation that they have 2 clutches, or whatever you call sets of babies.
Right, 2 broods a season, yes.
A season. And because it was over the car, I was not happy about that, because every time they take off, they
drop something on the car.
Right.
So between clutches, I removed the nest last year.
Okay.
And these poor things wore themselves out rebuilding the nest, so I finally gave up because I thought they were going to get too late in the season and really be in trouble. But I wonder, do they seem to come back? Are they the same birds that are coming back each year, and are they the same pair or just one of the pair? And, you know, how do you get them to go someplace else?
Barn swallows, they do return to the same territories every year. Now, whether it's the same nesting pair or it was part of one of the two broods, they will come back to the same territory. That's not uncommon at all. Barn swallows are very, very persistent birds. Once they've established a location that they want to build a nest, battling them is almost impossible. They're going to be one step ahead of you at all times, it seems like. The only way that you can feasibly keep the barn swallows off is to take away that perching area where they're building that nest, and that is really the only feasible way.
The instinct is pretty strong then, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you. To someone in East Central Illinois here, line number 3. Hello.
Hi, I was wondering, what is the bluebird's territory in Illinois? I put up a couple of bluebird houses by my farm in the roadsides on the east side several years ago, and I never get a bluebird, and there are like evergreens across the road, there's a waterway there and so forth, but I just wondered, are they just not going to come to that area?
No, not necessarily. Bluebirds will not tolerate another bluebird in a territory of about 100 yards distance.
Okay.
So you do have to spread those houses out.
They're like 300 feet apart.
Yeah, you're pretty much close. That's about the right distance where you could have one nesting pair, then 300 feet down have another nesting pair. That's very common. That is about what their territory runs. Bluebird numbers are increasing in the area. They're becoming more and more common. The biggest thing is with the bluebird houses, you want to mount them in areas that are not going to gather competing species, such as house sparrows or house wrens. If it's in the trees or near real close to a tree line, you're going to have house wrens. Even chickadees or titmice might possibly take over the nest.
Yeah, I never see anything like that. Okay. I do see the red-winged blackbirds, but I've never seen, there's been no competition. Try to keep it cleaned out, if anything
right.
does get in, but I've never seen any other birds attempting to get into the houses, and especially not bluebirds.
What city are you near?
Pontiac,
yeah. You should be able to attract them there. How many years have the houses been up?
Three
years. Mm-hmm. You might want to consider trade. How many houses do you have?
Just two. They're
just
on
two.
The east side, facing sort of the north angle to the northeast.
Okay, I'd try moving them.
Okay.
You've had them up that long. I would go ahead and put them in some different locations. And when I say moving them, it might be simply a 20-yard move or a 20-foot move, something different, but change it up a little bit. For some reason, they're not liking possibly the territory or the location of the house. And by simply doing a small move like that, a lot of times can get you some activity.
Well, I know a lot of people talk about feeding them those mealyworms.
Right.
But, I don't have that kind of accessibility. It's a distance for me to go out,
Yeah.
And everything else will get it before they do, probably.
Right. And see, and feeding of bluebirds is a secondary action. You want them to start nesting first, then worry about getting the food to them.
Oh, okay. And incidentally, last year, I heard the other caller talking about the turkey vultures.
Mm-hmm.
I saw 20 of them
right.
in a field near the Vermilion River
yes.
around Pontiac,
yep.
and they are ugly.
Yes, they are.
They are pretty scary looking. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Right, thank you. And let's go here to line one, Gifford. Hello.
Hi. I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you.
And I have a question. I had the opportunity of getting a rose-breasted grosbeak
okay.
in my feeder for just one day.
Okay.
So where do they go? Are they just passing through? Or
they're passing through. This location where we're at is a stopover for them. They're heading north. They're establishing breeding pairs. They're heading north to nest up north. Northern United States, southern Canada.
Okay.
With the weather that we're having right now this week is actually very good for us as far as bird watching goes. We've got a cold front coming from up north. We've got very cool, damp temperatures here. And so what that's going to do is going to stall out the migration a little bit and hopefully keep those birds around a little bit longer.
Okay.
This spring compared to last spring is night and day. We've got so many people right now with grosbeaks that are feeding them at their feeders, and not just one or two. We've got people coming in with 12 or 20 at a time.
Oh, man. Are they fun to watch?
Yeah, they're one of the most beautiful birds you'll ever see, and just enjoy them while they're here because it won't last long.
Okay. And then with those bluebird houses, are they – supposed to face the south?
Typically, what you want to do is keep it out in a direction where you're going to have the less inclement amount of inclement weather. What I've told people for years is I've never seen a bird carrying a compass. So really, if direction, if it doesn't mean much, I wouldn't worry about it a whole lot. Usually you try to keep the entrance holes of any birdhouse away from inclement weather, but the providing the habitat is the key thing. And so you're providing that box for the bird, and they're going to use it if they're in that area.
All right. Well,
okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Next caller is in Southern Illinois, line number two. Hello.
This is line two, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
I had a couple questions. First one on turkeys. We have a hunter living next to us who introduced wild turkeys maybe 10 years ago, and they're everywhere in the woods now, scratching
right.
it up. I've heard from other people that they carry a mite, and when we walk in the woods now, we get this, it's like a little bit bigger than a chigger, which is also in the mite family, and they're black. Is that true? Is that what?
That's probably not the mite. That there are avian lice and mites. But they're not something that's going to be parasitic to a human as a general rule. The thing that you're describing sounds like a deer tick.
Oh, it's tinier than that. It's just maybe it is a seed tick, but I thought turkeys were bringing them in. I'm glad to know they aren't.
Yeah, it's now turkeys, any wildlife in the woods, and this falls into the category with birds also, which covers the turkeys, they're going to carry lice, they're going to carry mites, they're going to carry ticks. They are carrying parasites. They're one of the transporters of it. The parasite is living off of that animal also. As far as transmission of the lice or the mites from avian to humans, it's something that I'm not aware of. I mean, it does exist. It is out there, but I wouldn't worry about it too often.
And ticks and mites are in the same family, right?
As far as I know, yes.
Okay, I had a couple other questions. When you talk about warblers, is there specific names for the warblers, or do they just go under the name of a warbler?
Well, warbler is a general term for the family group of birds that we're talking about. You can see, I'm trying to think of what the exact number is, 15-plus different warblers in Illinois during migration.
Is there a good book you could recommend on warblers?
Any of the Eastern Field Guides. Peterson does have a warbler's guide out that is specifically for warblers. It's as thick as a telephone book. There's a lot of different photos, a lot of different color plates in there of all the different type of color patterns that you can see with individual species. You have magnolia warblers, you have chestnut-sided warblers, bay-breasted warblers, Cape May warblers. There is an endless
list.
There are
different names.
Right, there are different names for them. Any Eastern Field Guide, Stokes Eastern Field Guide, Peterson, Sibley's is another good one. Any of those Eastern Field Guides are going to have a very nice section of warblers in there, so that does help.
Two more questions.
Okay.
On purple martins.
Okay.
Had a house up for several years by a pond, by an open field, and someone told me that it should be in a in your lawn, so they're looking for snakes. They don't want tall grasses near it. Is that
right? Yeah, there's two dimensions that you want to keep in mind when you're placing a purple martin house. One is 40 to 50 feet in any direction that you have that house, there can be nothing. That means no trees, no bushes, no poles, no buildings.
Mm-hmm.
However, the other dimension that you want to keep in mind is about 100 to 150 feet. They like to being that close to human activity. That gives them a sense of security. So if you have a house that's located out in a farm area where there are no outbuildings or there's no human activity at all, you're probably not going to have as much purple martin activity as you would, say, if somebody who has one in a urban setting that lives on a detention pond where they have a big open yard with the pond there, but the house is located somewhat close to where they live, you're going to have a lot more activity with the purple martins.
They're just social, aren't they?
Yes.
And how many I know wrens build a house or build a nest and then build another one and another one. What's the reason for this?
What that's called is the male comes into the territory. He builds what we call a dummy nest in all different locations that he can find that he would think was suitable to raise young. And then he courts the female and she gets to pick.
Oh.
So that little bit of nesting material that you see in your house wren boxes, that is the dummy nest that the male had put in there when he first arrived, and which is going on right now.
They're so busy.
Yes, yep, exactly. And she picks. Now, she might have one brood in one particular house, and then the second brood, it could be the same female, same male. She might jump across the yard and go to another house. So that's why it's very important when you have house wren boxes up, you have more than one per yard. You want to have at least two, because you're kind of playing into that game with the male and for the part of that courtship that goes on, and it's bettering your odds of getting in the nest and staying in your yard.
And bluebirds can have more than, what, maybe two or three?
Correct. Broods in a season, yes.
We had five hatch out and fly away there.
Oh, great.
Wonderful.
Excellent.
Well, I love the show. Thank you.
No, thanks for calling.
Thank you for the call. We'll just keep on talking with folks here. We have about, say, 10 minutes left with Larry Keller from Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign. Questions about birds and bird watching, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Someone on the cell phone here calling from Oakwood, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
I've had bluebirds about the last 3 years, and incidentally, my nest hole faces east. So anyway, a question about, I could have sworn being outside around the house that I heard them in December and January.
The bluebirds, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, that's very common.
Oh, okay.
Yes, they technically are not a migratory bird. They will do population shifts, but they, if there is food and water available during the wintertime, they will hold in a territory in east central Illinois. That's not uncommon at all.
Okay. Is there anything I can do to help them out during the winter?
Heated bird bath. That seems to be the biggest attractant that really does help the bluebirds during the wintertime. You can also make sure that your houses are cleaned out and that they're still accessible, because they will pile in. You might see 5-6 different bluebirds pile in to keep warm at night and use it as roosting. That's possible, too. Food-wise, feed mealworms, crushed raisins, any type of berries that you can put out on a small tray, too. They will feed on that. Okay.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Back here to Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hi. Well, I have a comment and a question. Yesterday, I came to the intersection of Mumford and Vine in Urbana, and there was a female turkey sitting in the middle of the intersection. Her head was tucked in, and I thought maybe she had been injured, so I parked the car, and I walked over there, and she just got up and walked away. So she had just chosen to rest in the middle of the intersection. I was afraid she would be hit or something, because cars tend to go pretty fast. And the other thing is, when I go down Race Street on those giant trees that are on the other side of the family housing, there are these hawks there, or falcons, and could you just tell me a little bit about them and what they really are, or their proper name?
Okay. Depending on what – there are several different species that are very common in town as far as the hawks go. The larger one, it's not as common, but they do exist here, are the red-tailed hawks. And our biggest time for hawk activity in the urban area is usually October through March. Now, we also do have the Cooper's hawks and also a few sharp-shinned hawks that we'll see around. So just depending on what species you're seeing, and we're starting to have nesting pairs now in the area, so that's very, very common. Hawk populations are going up, so they're doing very well. More and more people are seeing them, and more people are getting aggravated with them taking birds off their bird feeders in the backyard, especially during the wintertime. So it just depends on what species, but it's not uncommon anymore to see them in town.
Okay, because I saw like 6 wheelie, but they were very low. They were just above the treetops. And one time last year, my husband and I were walking through that area, and there was a, I don't want to say a baby. It was pretty big, but it was a young one. And there were feathers all over the ground, and I told my husband, let's walk away very far.
Right.
Because I'm sure there's a mother here somewhere.
Right.
But it just seems like, I'm just wondering if that's sort of like a kind of like a historic sort of nesting area, because it seems like they've been there since we've been here.
Yeah, it very well could be, and they will. They'll come back to the same territory year after year and use that for nesting purposes. The University of Illinois softball diamond 2 years ago up on one of the light poles over the ball diamond had a nesting pair of red-tailed hawks. So it's not uncommon to see them at all.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Bye. Not very long ago, a few months ago, I was pulling out of the parking lot of our building here, and right across the street just north of here, there was a hawk that had killed a blue jay.
Mm-hmm.
And the blue jay was so big, the hawk could hardly even fly off with it.
Right.
And I was a little bit surprised. Why is it that now we're starting to see more hawks in urbanized area like Champaign-Urbana?
It's multiple reasons. Populations are higher. Usually during the migration period, you've got the younger, immature hawks are coming in because it's a lot easier to hunt and find food. Mm-hmm. And then once again, like we talked, urban areas are sprawling out further and further. But these birds are, and people are also planting more stuff in the yard, making it more natural, attracting more wildlife. It's perfect hunting conditions for them. Typically, the bird that you're seeing catching other birds, such as your blue jay, that's a Cooper's hawk. More mm-hmm. than likely, that's what it was. Very, very common around here anymore. We've got nesting pairs even in town. I've got a few customers that come in from time to time, let me know how their nests are doing and stuff. So it's something that's here. It's probably going to increase, and it's always going to be here.
They're very impressive birds.
Yes.
They are indeed. Let's talk with someone in Urbana, line one. Hello. Is there a caller there, line one in Urbana?
Oh, hi.
Yes, hi.
My colleague, Tom Kovacs, told me that last Saturday there was a big bird watching outing or counting.
Right.
And can you tell us a little bit about it, and I'll take your answer off the air.
Okay.
Off the air or off the phone.
Okay. Okay, thank you. It was the National Spring Bird Count, and what that usually is the first Saturday of May. The Audubon organization here in the Champaign-Urbana area is the one that kind of coordinates for Champaign County. Each county in Illinois has their own coordinator, and basically what it is, people go out for that 24-hour period. A lot of people will start at midnight and go to midnight and count how many birds and how many different species that they actually see in a given area. And what that basically does for us is it gives us a snapshot of the populations of birds during that time period. And they use that particular information for research, gives us an idea of how populations of certain species are doing, what type of environmental effects in certain areas are having on particular species. So it's a really good way of seeing what is occurring in the bird world is what it is.
Okay. Something else maybe I mentioned here we got word of for people who are interested in birds. The public is invited to a songbird banding day at the Illinois Raptor Center. And there will be a guest here, a man named Vern Kleen, who is apparently a master bird bander from the Audubon Societies of Illinois and Springfield. And this will be taking place in Decatur at the Illinois Raptor Center, which is on Hill Road in Decatur. There is a cost for admission that includes an Adopt a Songbird donation to the Audubon Society's Land Acquisition Fund. So there is an event that's going on, and this will be tomorrow, starting at 8:30 in the morning. That's in Decatur. If you'd like to register or get more information, you can call 217-963-6909. Or you can go to the, I think the Raptor Center has a website. Well, no, I'm not sure they have a website. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they do.
They do. Yeah, they do. And I'm trying to hear. It's IllinoisRaptorCenter.org, it looks like. So there you can go to the website. There it is. You can go to the website, and I'm sure also you can find out more information there about the Raptor Center and about this particular event.
Yeah, and that event, if somebody has an opportunity to go down there to do that, it'll be one of the most enjoyable outdoor events you'll ever partake in. It is a lot of fun. They give you a lot of hands-on information. You get to see a lot of different bird species like what we've been talking about with the warblers and stuff that they'll probably be misnetting and catching and banding. Really a neat activity to do. So if you have the opportunity, I would definitely recommend doing that.
Great. Okay. That's the Illinois Raptor Center, and it's in Decatur. And again, their website, if you'd like to get more information about the center, it's www.IllinoisRaptorCenter.org. Okay, very good. Well, let's talk with some more folks here. Let's see. And next, we will talk with a caller line number two, and that is someone in Aurora. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hello.
Good morning. I was one of the very fortunate people that went on the count last Saturday. And, of course, being a birder for so many years, I'm always thrilled when I'm out with the birds. Because it was very cool and has been very cool, to say the least, today, the warblers hadn't come through.
Right.
The only warbler we saw was the palm warbler and the blue-gray gnatcatcher. And I'm trying to look down my list. We did see four indigo buntings.
Right.
And anybody that is interested, they ought to go out. It's just another world where the birds are. It's just delightful. And what's nice is now you see turkey vultures, which we hadn't seen, but now we can see more turkey vultures. Only saw two bluebirds, sorry to say.
Yeah, last Saturday, as far as bird counts go in the past, was one of the tougher ones. There's no question.
Yeah, we only saw 52 species.
Yep, exactly. I had about that many myself.
Did you really?
Yeah, yep. It was very, very low.
May I ask what your rarest bird was?
My personal, more interesting one that I did catch a glimpse, I did have one come out in front of me, was a yellow-billed cuckoo. So I did have
one
of those, yes.
Really? You saw a cuckoo? I haven't seen or heard a cuckoo in years.
Yeah, there's one spot that I go to that we usually see them in this one particular area, and I happened to catch one there this year, so I was very fortunate.
I have to ask permission to go, and I am going to ask permission for the next count. Do you do a Christmas count down there?
They do, yes.
I'm going to try to get in on a Christmas count. They don't do it around here, but maybe I can start it. Thanks much.
Thanks for the call. Right.
Well,
bye.
Thanks for the call. We're pretty much at the point where we're going to have to wrap up for this time around. Any last thing that you'd like to leave with folks?
Get the feeders out and make sure they're filled, because this is the best time of year, actually. You're going to see a lot of different species and a lot of enjoyable species, too. So a lot of color in the yard right now.
Okay, very good. Make sure you clean them.
Yes.
Make sure you clean them often, because you don't want to set up a situation where you're going to make the bird sick in the cars trying to feed them and attract them to the yard. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, thanks very much.
Thanks, David.
Larry Keller is president of Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign. The broadcast today is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign. Locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925, the staff at Owens Funeral Home invite you to join them in supporting public radio. Support for the broadcast also comes from the City of Urbana, presenting the local farmers market at the square every Saturday morning starting at 7 a.m., with homegrown produce, fresh flowers and plants, baked goods and food, and original works of art, located near the corner of Illinois and Vine Streets in downtown Urbana. For more information, call 384-2444. And that is it for us here on Focus 580. We're here weekday mornings from 10 to noon. A lot of different topics for you every week. And always hope you can listen in and call in. And right now, we want you to stay tuned, because coming up next, much more information as part of the Afternoon Magazine. And the host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, we'll take a look at the efforts of Republican women to shape their party. Our guest will be historian Catherine Rimp, author of Republican Women, Feminism and Conservatism, From Suffrage Through the Rise of the New Right. Let's turn our attention now to commodity prices. Kansas May wheat trading at $4.77, up 11. Chicago May wheat $3.95, up 12.5. July $4.02.5, up 10.5.